like weirdly optimistic music. What is that, Kramer versus Kramer or something? Chariots of Fire? What is that? Oh, it's baseball.
Yeah, that's the old theme for Major League Baseball. World Series today, baby.
Okay. Are the Dodgers winning? No? Oh, boo.
No.
Okay. All right. Although Ken does have his Dodger blue on. You don't care.
That's totally me.
All right, so Ken, what I like to do in the postgame to discover what folks are all about is I like to talk about their high school days. Okay.
Oh boy.
Okay, yes. So they're going to be interesting. But first, with you, it must be noted for the record your ethnicity, because it's fascinating. So obviously half Asian, half Jewish, right? Ken Klippenstein.
Of course.
Right. Except it turns out you're not, which is weird. So what are you?
So my mother immigrated here from El Salvador during the war, and then so she's full Salvadoran. And then my father immigrated here from Canada, and he is of German ancestry. So I don't think I've ever had someone guess my ethnicity correctly.
Yeah.
I'm not Asian and I'm not Jewish, and those are the two most common ones I get.
All right, so it's a combination of Santa Ana and Dusseldorf.
There you go.
Okay.
Totally natural upbringing. My dad had a doctorate in chemistry and physics, I think. My mom had like a middle school education. Between the two of them, that made for a very confusing upbringing. There's two very different backgrounds, you know?
Right. And so let's keep it real, though. The reason people guess Asian is you look a little Asian,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You look biracial in that sense. So does your mom look Asian?
She gets she gets called Filipina sometimes, but it's actually, my dad has like the more narrow eyes, and I think that's actually, ironically enough, where it comes from, my white side, that people think I'm Asian.
Oh,
and then also the skin tone, you know, halfway between. My mom is darker and my dad, of course, is very pale. So I think the olive complexion kind of throws people off.
Yeah.
You probably get some of this too, right?
No. Nobody thinks I'm Asian. But funny enough and ironically, I'm the Asian one in this panel. Okay, because Turks are originally Central Asian.
Of course.
Right? And so that even the Turks, like, they know that, but they don't know that and they don't recognize that. If you told a Turkish guy, hey, did you know you're Asian? He'd be like, what do you mean I'm Asian? What do you mean? Right? Like, we came from Central Asia. They're like, yeah, a long time ago. That doesn't count.
That's what my mother says when you call her, when you say, oh, you know, you're Native American, because that's where, you know, Latin Americans came from. And then, of course, the Spanish came. And she's like, no, I'm full European. It's like, Mom, your skin is dark. How is that even possible? And she's like, I don't know, but I'm European. And of course, the DNA test comes in because everyone's getting the new one.
Yeah.
And we show it to her. She's like, oh, I guess you guys are right. I am Indian.
Okay. Like Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
See, but kidding aside, though, Elizabeth Warren's family members told her something about how she was partly Native American, right?
Yeah.
And your mom's family members told her that she was mainly, if not exclusively, European.
Exactly.
And it turns out it's not true, or it's not exactly right. That's so normal. It's 100% normal. I actually, if I'm keeping it real, I'm waiting for 23andMe or the Ancestry.com or whatever to do a big deal with us, like an advertising deal. I'm being super honest with you guys. Then I want to do the DNA test. Because we think that I'm 7/8 Turkish, by the way, whatever that means, right? Because Turks are from all over the world.
Ottoman Empire, right?
Yeah, the Ottoman Empire from Africa to Europe, to Asia, et cetera, right? But 1/8 is a mystery. It could be Kurdish, it could be Crusader, okay? Because that part of the family is called Jambolat, and so that's also like the Jumblats, the same family. They're huge in Lebanon, small in Turkey, and some historians believe that they're named after the Jean Pauls.
Huh.
So I could be partly French. Little twisty twist, okay. So we'll find out. Anyway, maybe one day if we ever get an advertisement.
You have to crowdfund it.
Yeah, crowdfund. Maybe the right wing will pay. They'll be like, let's find out what Jake is.
This is what it's all about now. So get your skull measured.
That's kind of fun. Okay, all right. I'm gonna think about that more because that's an interesting idea. All right, but back to you. Okay. Enough about me. anyway, seriously.
Enough about me. What do you think about me?
Exactly. All right, fine. Back to me. I'm kidding. Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in the Bay Area. Do you know where Livermore is?
No.
It's right next to San Francisco.
Yeah, I know that city.
That has connotations, especially among younger viewers, but it was actually a really cool place to grow up. Right before, I just old enough to have grown up there right before Silicon Valley came and really colonized it. And so there was a really vibrant, really vibrant hip hop.
Your family has a long history of getting colonized.
I know, right? there was a vibrant hip hop scene emanating, especially from Oakland at the time. And that really, I got into rap because of that. And there's so many Asian people, there's Pacific Islanders, there's people from India, there's people from China, there's people from Japan. And for me, at least, that was really formative. I don't know if I'd be a reporter if it were not for that. Because learning to negotiate all these different kinds of, cultural groups, and they all speak slightly different ways, not necessarily different languages, but different, ways of doing things and stuff. And that, I feel like, helped me to adapt. And that was so valuable. I didn't realize, people always say, talk about diversity and why it's important in these really vague, abstract ways. To me, it was concretely beneficial. I learned how to get through life, and in life, there's a lot of different groups, and even in reporting, there's people of this type of politics, this person might be from here, and so to me, it was very practical to have had that experience with diversity.
What's weird and what I can't understand is how you can claim there's all those cultures when Tucker Carlson told me there's only one culture in America. I don't even know if there is a uniculture, which one is it? Right? It's such a weird thing to say.
Native Americans, maybe?
Yeah, well, originally. and by the way, the Germans were also colonized by the Romans back in the day.
I didn't even know that.
Yes. And so that was the fights with the Visigoths. But eventually the German barbarians stormed the gates.
I didn't know you're a history guy.
Barely. if I was Newt Gingrich, I'd say, I'm an amateur, semi-professional historian.
Judeo-Christian, that's his whole thing. Yeah. Everything's Judeo-Christian.
Yeah. So back to me. in all seriousness, when I was growing up, and I never thought about it that way, so I want to give you credit for triggering a really interesting idea, and triggering me in a way that I don't need a safe space, but I actually benefited from. Because, I grew up in a very multicultural town in New Jersey. Lots of people from Korea, China, India, Jews, Italians, a little bit of black, a little bit of Latino. So we're super multicultural. And I hadn't realized until you said it, maybe that's where I learned to look at things from other people's perspectives, which is, I think, one of the most important parts of what we do on this show. Is that I grew up with so many different perspectives that maybe that became more natural to me, where if I grew up in a unitary culture, maybe that wouldn't have happened.
That's exactly the effect it had on me. And I wish we wouldn't talk about it in this sort of hokey way, like kumbaya, like, differences matter. I wish we could just talk about it, practically. It's almost if I have kids, I would love for them to have that experience so that wherever they need to move, however the U.S. changes, wherever their work takes them, they're going to be able to adapt and fit in these different groups.
So one more quick thing about history, and then I want to get back into your history and talk about and ask you embarrassing questions about high school. But you're absolutely right. If that had come up, for example, in Tucker Carlson debate, what I was going to talk about is not that it's like a lovely, happy thing, diversity. Right. It's that it's advantageous.
Totally.
So part of the reason that Europe eventually succeeded and grew was because of all the diversity, because it was a lot of different cultures in a tight, narrow space, and they kept moving, and even the wars help move people around in a way that they mix a lot more. Mm-hmm. And what happens when you mix a lot more is you learn more. And so you grow as a society, because the more you learn, obviously, the more technological advancement you can have. Same reason the Arab Empire grew so much in the beginning. Same reason Kublai Khan grew in the beginning. He was very open to other cultures, and in fact, adopted other languages instead of their own. To run the Mongol Empire. And so while Kublai Khan was in charge of the Mongol Empire, that diversity helped them to expand.
Well, this is true on a scientific, like any biologist will tell you, biodiversity is critical to the survival of any organism. So it's insane to me that people are like, we need to have one thing, because anywhere else in nature outside of, Homo sapiens and our ideologies we've kind of concocted, that's beneficial. So it's just crazy to me that anyone would say the contrary.
Yeah, and in fact, we know what happens when you keep into one culture, and sometimes it gets to the point where the royals would only breed with themselves, mm-hmm. and that's how you get the Mad King.
Right. It's like nature's telling us what to do and we won't listen.
That's
know?
Exactly right. And that's why you would have a bunch of lunatic rulers, including the Ottoman Empire. Because whenever you just have only a certain group of people mixing with other similar families, eventually you get mental illness.
Right.
And that doesn't help an empire, as it turns out. Okay, so high school. What extracurricular activities did you do? Sports or debate club or what? What did you do?
I'm ashamed to say that I did the same one Ted Cruz did. I was a debate guy. And looking back, it wasn't really about pressing different ideas. It was more about who has more of a kind of rhetorical flair and who can kind of present themselves better. One thing I don't regret, though, was I was a skater. I was a total skate rat in high school. And that was another thing that a lot of people said, oh, this is, what's the point of this? And sort of like diversity, like I thought there were practical benefits to it. Those being, there were no rules. You come up with your own thing. You kind of develop your own image, your style. There wasn't. What I loved is there was much less of a hierarchy in it, since everyone had a different kind of tricks they did and a different style. It wasn't the same as like this guy has like football. It's like this is the score at the end, and these are your statistics. It was much less well defined, and because of that, it gave me space, I thought, to develop a little more.
Okay, finally we have a divergence. I'm very much anti-skater. You guys are a hazard on the roads. You guys are maniacs, and then when you get hit, you're all going to complain. Okay, let's just keep it real. That's what happens. Bah humbug, I add. But we got a bunch of skaters here. Maybe you guys could take it out to the parking lot as they do on Friday sometimes.
We'll make sure to make as much.
I didn't know Shekels was that much of a skater, like doing tricks and stuff. So grab a skateboard afterwards.
Dude, you're in the Mecca. You're in California.
I know. I can't stand it. No, seriously. Like, I know I'm old, but skaters will jump in front of your car.
Totally.
And then I got to slam on the brakes. And if I hit the guy, everybody would say, you're the worst person on the planet. Yeah. When that son of a bitch jumped in front of me.
There's definitely an antisocial quality. And I think that owes to there's a selection bias where the people that do it were the ones that didn't really fit in a lot of other things. I mean, I couldn't play football. I was like a wiry little kid, you know? And mm-hmm. I couldn't play baseball. I wasn't strong enough to hit the ball far enough. So there is an element of like there being misfits. But again, I thought that was the cool part about it. Because no one fit in, and then you see all these different things, and there's much less of a monoculture, you know?
No, I get it. You guys are rebels. You're cool. Whatever, okay? I was the football player who bullied you.
Did you play football?
I did, but I didn't bully anyone. I hated bullies. Couldn't stand them. Anyways, and we had almost no skating culture in where I grew up in New Jersey.
I remember thinking, it was like, I was came out of middle school, and it's like, man, what am I going to play? Everyone's playing sports, and I just... It's not that I wasn't coordinated, it's just I'm not particularly tall, I wasn't really strong. And then that's why skating was something for the really skinny kids. And,
I get it. So, I didn't do debate club, I did Penn Political Club. The difference there is I went to the debate club, this was in college, not in high school.
Yeah.
And they were debating cats and dogs. I was like, okay, so this is a jerk-off club.
Right. That's exactly the impression I got about it.
I mean, we're all measuring our cocks, right? Because there is no winning cats or dogs. Right. So you're just trying to figure out who's smarter.
You can't really marshal evidence. It's just kind of how do you...
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, how charming are you in it?
Exactly. You know what I mean, it's not really smarter. It's not exactly charming. It's like, but who could win that debate? And it's cock measuring, so I didn't like it.
Yeah.
I was like, if we're going to... I love debating, but we should be debating real issues... ones that matter.
That's what I didn't understand, and especially in college, was these very abstract debates about, especially in philosophy courses, when you abstract a debate from the like conditions of the world that you're living in, like what the hell is the point of that? I don't understand. And they love that stuff. It's almost like they prefer it to be about these abstract things divorced from reality. And that to me is insane, because look at the world. Everything is like
bad. There's plenty of debate in the world. It's not like we got to go to cats and dogs, because we're not shy on topics, we're not short on topics. But Anna was also in the debate club. We get it, like we like to talk, we like to think through ideas, and that's why it makes sense. And you're now in Wisconsin, I just disclosed you, but you guys are all members, so it's okay, I disclosed the secret bunker.
Don't tell anybody.
Yeah, so how'd you get from San Francisco to Wisconsin?
I got married, and my wife's family is all from North Wisconsin. They are all like full German heritage. They came here from Germany in like during the First World War. And in some ways, it's actually benefited me. Everyone's always like, oh, well, you're from New York, right? Just because of the stories I've broken. And they're always surprised, but... it's sort of counterintuitive. It's beneficial in the sense that being away from the bubble, that can be a benefit. Mm-hmm. not having the same cost of living stuff. I mean, it's easy to sort of have contempt for the press not going hard enough, but some of that, a lot of that is institutional, a lot of that is structural. Mm-hmm. If you have a mortgage that's through the roof, you're not gonna take a whole lot of chances. If the, you know, the industry is extremely cutthroat and competitive, you know, cost of living in the Midwest is like nothing compared to the coast. So in certain ways, it's been a blessing. I'm not saying do this if you're a young reporter, but for me, it was beneficial. And then also, you get to meet a different kind of person than the Beltway type you would if you were in Washington. That gives you a different perspective. The way I compensate for the lack of, you know, access to sources in real life is very aggressive use of the phone. And now with the internet, I think it's a lot more possible to do it remotely in a way that it wasn't probably just 10 years ago.
Yeah, look, I think we got lucky that we set the show up in LA. It was almost an accident. It's just because I was at writing jobs in television and Ben was trying to get jobs as an anchor here in LA. We could have done the show anywhere. It's on the internet, right? But thank God we didn't do it in DC. Every time I go back to DC, I think that culture is so toxic and it permeates everywhere. But maybe even more important is that you can't help but be, if you're a decent person, be a little friendly to people or maybe a lot friendly.
Exactly.
And then you are more reluctant to criticize them when it's actually merited, right? And so I feel like that's why a lot of people in Washington are soft in that sense. Mm-hmm. And not because they're bad people, but maybe because of the opposite.
You're exactly right. And I travel there, you know, to try to develop sources because there's stuff you can't do in person that you can't do over the phone. Whenever I go there, I'm struck by how insular it is. I mean, it's not an enormously small, it's not a small city by any means. However, the media class there is very small. Everyone knows everyone. It's the same parties, even among, you know, progressive publications. And just like you say, it's not some grand conspiracy. In my experience, most people want to do the best they can. It's just that if you're only surrounded by people with one point of view, that's what you're going to have reinforced. So I think that's exactly right.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I'd love to do more, and maybe next time you come into town, we'll get into your college life and go back to high school a little bit.
I'm fine with not.
No, I insist. But Benjamin Crump is here. Now, I told you guys on the show that it was going to be live for the members, but it turns out we need one other person to run the live stream and we don't have him. The studio, that was the last minute interview, so it's not going to be live, but you guys will of course get it as soon as possible. So I'll do that interview now and you guys will probably see it in a day or two as soon as we can put it up. Same with the interview I'm going to do with Ken and Jonathan about their reporting rather than about their personal lives. All right, thank you guys, we'll see you tomorrow.